Welcome to today's episode of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast by Surrogacy Mentor. I'm your host, Marielle Schuberth, three-time experienced gestational surrogate and intake manager for Surrogacy Mentor and Modern Parent Mentor, where our aim is a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey for all. Today, I'm excited to have current GC Raya with us. Welcome, Raya. And today's topic is navigating intended parent relationships. So as we get started here, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your family and what made you want to become a surrogate?
I just, before we start, I have to say, Marielle, that I have listened to every single episode that this podcast ever put out on air, even before I became a surrogate. So
I love that.
It was.
I always forget that people actually listen to these. You know.
No, it's like I'm meeting my own heroes. So this is. I'm very honored to be invited to speak.
Well, good. Well, we're so glad.
So my name is Raya, and I'm 38 years old. I gave birth four times to my own children. I've got a girl boy, and I am now pregnant in my 29th week with a baby girl who I will be returning to her parents, who knows when, but more or less 11 weeks from now. And they already have a three-year-old that they gave birth to with an egg donation, and the same batch was also used when I did the transfers. So it will be a complete biological sister for this daughter that they have.
Awesome.
What made me want to become a surrogate? Well, towards the end of the breastfeeding of my fourth, I turned to my husband and said, "Honey, what's next?" You know, in the family planning conversation. And he said that he's done, that we are blessed and we've got our hands full and we don't need more kids. And I said, but isn't it such a waste? My body's so good at this. I'm so fertile and I get pregnant easily and I carry well and I deliver well and I recover well. Like, what a shame. And he said, "You know, darling, find someone else that can enjoy all these blessings. We don't need any more." And look, I didn't choose my body. Okay, this is what I was given by God. But these blessings are just—they're so precious, and not everyone can have them. And it felt selfish. It just felt selfish to keep it all to myself. And you know, looking around, what can I do with these like urges to share the love? I learned about surrogacy and I started informing myself both with the help of your podcast and with the help of the World Wide Web.
Yep.
And, it just felt right. It felt so right. It felt like I would fit, you know, the bill. So I started a process. I started learning. I got in touch with an agency. I collected all the paperwork. It actually didn't work out with that specific agency, but it worked out in a different matter.
I love that. Yeah, that sounds very similar to how a lot of women start their journeys of, I want to be pregnant, but our family is complete, or we're done having our own family, but you just feel that missing pregnancy and you know you were made for this. I always said that too, like I've got this perfectly good uterus laying around, like what can I do with it? And I think that is a very similar way that everybody kind of starts. So not everybody, but a lot of women start their journeys with those similar feelings of like, oh well, what can we do here now that I'm done with ours? So how did your husband react when you told him about surrogacy? Was he relieved because, okay, at least we're not coming home with the baby? Or was he a little shocked? Like, how did he take everything?
So he's a clergyman. And so the first thing he did was go to the books to read about the permissibility of this process, because it sounded, I mean, he didn't know much about it. So it sounded to him on the offset like, is this kosher. And he didn't find a very clear answer. It was quite ambiguous and vague, but thankfully our family leans towards the liberal, you know, pluralistic, lenient side of faith. And so he was able to find an authority figure that did, you know, give the green light. And so that was, as far as I was concerned, that was his big potential limitation. What I do with my body has never been an issue in our relationship. So I didn't need his, you know, his permission. I just wanted his blessing, and I got it.
Yeah, well, and I know there are some faiths where it is very clearly not okay to do IVF. And so I completely understand. I had a close friend who dealt with that within her faith. She worked for a faith-based school and was actually let go from that school because she was open about her journey to growing her family through IVF. And in the eyes of that church, that was not okay. And clearly she was kind of excommunicated for that. So I do, from a somewhat personal standpoint, understand that faith can be a big factor for a lot of people when it comes to how they grow their families. And I'm glad that within your faith, you all were able to find some support from that, especially with your husband being a clergy, needing that support for him. And I'm assuming, you know, you're close circle of people around to be able to have that and know that it's, you know, okayed by the higher powers. I think that's great. So then with that, how did the rest of your affiliations handle the news? Because it's one thing for your husband to accept and his, you know, superior, but how did they all take the news?
Starting with my mom, was not thrilled about it. She just thought it was gonna put me in a risky situation, and she was concerned that it might negatively impact my well-being or my four kids. And she just didn't think this was the best way for me to dedicate my, you know, my service. And I'll go even farther to say that I have another family member who was downright opposed. She said that it's not ecological to have another child in a world that's overflowing with too many humans and not enough resources to provide for them. And that there's so many like unwanted babies. The thing is that I know a little bit about adoption. It's not easy. And you know, to just say to all these couples or individuals that want to have their own families, go adopt because it's more ecological, like their chances of completing their wishes are not high enough. And my heart goes out to them. So, you know, I appreciated the warning signs that I got from my close family. It was helpful in order to make an informed decision that this is what I want to do, that I'm passionate about it, that I can help here. I can't help there in adoption agencies. I've got nothing to do with that. I work in an administration in a university. I've got nothing to do with those processes. I don't work in law. I don't work in policy, public policy. So this was something that I felt I could do. It was realistic. It was something I could have control over and do good for the world. Add a little bit of business.
And I think it's such a wonderful thing to do. We do hear that a lot, the why don't they just adopt reaction to people who don't quite understand surrogacy. And typically, and very generally speaking, most of the time when I've personally heard that, it is coming from people who have grown their family themselves and have biological children. And so I would always pose the same question to them. Well, why did you not adopt? Why did you have your family? Because everybody is entitled to grow their family the way that they see fit. And a lot of times, in even gestational surrogacy, some portion of that embryo can be still biologically you know, part of the intended parent. Sometimes they do come from both donors, but we don't get to decide how somebody grows their family. That's, you know, to each their own. And if however they chose to grow their family is wonderful. Same with these parents. And if you don't agree with it, that's fine. Once they found out that you were continuing on with this, did you get that support once they realized, okay, she's serious about this? Or were they able to at least keep their comments to themselves, so to speak?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. Once it became a reality, then the comments and the negative opinions, you know, they just dissipated because it's irrelevant anymore. I'm already in this. So I'm independent and I'm free-willed. And so I did appreciate their opinions, but I ended up making my own decision. And so they're going to support me because they love me.
Yeah, and that's good, because in the end, you don't have to agree with what I'm doing, but at least offer me that support. So I'm so glad that you were able to get that. So you have four kids at home. What did they think? And when did you tell them that you were doing this? I know, depending on the age of your kids, it's a very precise process on how to tell them and when to tell them, because kids are smarter than we give them credit for, and they will notice your growing bump. So how did all of that go?
So I started introducing the concept before I even had my first transfer. Just the concept of like, what is IVF? What is an egg? What is a semen? Like, you know, how can you get an egg and a semen in a lab and then like, you know, create a embryo? Like, but just as anecdotes, not like as a personal, it wasn't a story that had to do with us at the time. It was just like, oh, did you know? Like a scientific fact. That was for the older ones. Today, they're 8 and 9, the older two. The younger ones at the time, it was way beyond their level. Today, it's 3 and 4, the two younger ones.
Yep.
And then once I actually got pregnant and I was even starting to show just a little bit, that's when we started giving them like books that we had bought about surrogacy. And we started telling them about this couple that we met and we want to be their friends, but they're very sad because they can't have another kid and they really want, and they're so happy that our family has siblings and they would have wanted that for their child too. And we know how important it is to have a brother. You have a brother. We know how important it is to have a sister. You have a sister, and so on. Wouldn't it be great? What could we do to help them? You know, and then, you know, then it connected, at least for the older kids, with like, yep, oh, you could help them.
That's amazing. That's such a good way to do it too. So that way it's not a totally foreign concept when it just seems like, oh yeah, you told me about that. Yeah, let's do it. That's an amazing way. I wish I'd thought of it in those terms of kind of planting the seed before the seed is planted, so to speak. I think that is such a wonderful way to do it because, yeah, kids notice whether you tell them or not, they know when something is different. And so I think involving them as much as is age appropriate in the process is definitely a good thing when it comes to kids. So you've said you're almost in your third trimester now. So you are getting towards the end. Tell us a little bit about your surrogacy experience. How did your transfers go? Did you get pregnant on the first try? Did it take more than one? And just we can kind of start there and continue on.
So it took on the second transfer, and after the first transfer that didn't take, I remember that the IPs were the ones comforting me, because I had never experienced like lack of success in the field of fertility before, at least not as far as I know. I never had a miscarriage, God forbid. I never, you know, so. And they've had so much of a challenge to become parents, like over a decade of trying. And so they, you know, they expected a no, they expected it. And I was the one that expected the yes. And so on the first transfer that didn't take, it was like a quite emotional encounter with them.
I'm glad they were able to offer you that support, because I know a lot of women worry about that, though. Like, are they going to blame me if I don't get pregnant, and how that's going to feel? So I'm glad that yours were able to offer you that support instead of that blame, and that they seemed good. Because I know for some intended parents who have gone through a lot of loss, they assume that they get a surrogate and that's going to be the magic fix, which a lot of times it is. But IVF is not a guarantee of pregnancy. Even if you do all the things and everything is perfect, sometimes it just doesn't take, and it's not anything wrong with you or that you did wrong. It just doesn't. But getting everybody, surrogates included, to realize that, it can be tough. So I'm glad that interaction was positive for you and you all decided to try again. And so the second transfer took?
So the contracts said that we were allowed up to 6 tries. They only had 4 frozen embryos. So the plan was that if, God forbid, we used up all 4 embryos and it still didn't take, that they would have to go and create more. Again, with a egg donation. So not such an easy process. And really, ultimately, we only had 6 attempts. And so when the first failed, like, I took it hard because it's stressful also for me. Like, I want to have a successful journey.
Yep. So you feel that pressure to want to give it to them. And
yeah,
it's a lot. It's kind of an unspoken thing in surrogates, that pressure that you do feel, that like you want it so bad for them that you have that hope. And when it doesn't happen or something happens, you feel rushed for them because you know how hopeful you were. So you can only imagine how hopeful they were. So it's definitely, it's a lot. And I can only imagine that stress of the first one not taking, how much more stress that added to the second one of like, oh, this really has to be it. And then you know the number of embryos they have. And yeah, it can be a lot. So I'm so glad that the second one was able to take. How did your intended parents take the news? Were they excited? Were they nervous? I know some intended parents have some trouble getting excited in the very beginning because they're kind of waiting for something to happen.
That's exactly what happened, Marielle. That's exactly what happened. And you know what? That was hard for me, that they weren't excited. I almost got offended. They didn't really explain their reaction to me. I had to kind of fill in the gaps with my own, you know, guesses of like, oh, they must not be excited because they're so used to failure. And so I had to guesstimate what was going on. And in fact, at a certain point, I actually had to contact the woman that had matched us and ask her to get involved, because I felt like they weren't telling a soul. They hadn't told their parents. They hadn't told their siblings. They hadn't told their close friends. And yes, I was showing already, and everyone around me could see me. And so, you know, I was doing all the explaining, and they were just free to continue with their life, like no change was happening. And it also became an elephant in the room. We would talk frequently, but not about that. We would talk about what you did, what's going on with your kids, but like, except for, you know, discussing when's the next, you know, whatever appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually needed an intervention, and that made a massive impact on the relationship between
sure. me and good on you for knowing that this needed to be better and speaking up, because I know how hard that can be, just as a GC to process that. My first attempt at a journey was actually for a family that I didn't end up successfully carrying a pregnancy for. And we had a very similar dynamic in that in the very beginning, they were so excited because they figured, okay, the doctor said it was something in my body. We figured first shot was going to work. I ended up having my first ever miscarriage was for a surrogacy pregnancy, and everybody was crushed. I've never had a miscarriage before. And they just assumed that because it wasn't in her body, that we weren't going to have that. And it happened at the exact same week that all of her miscarriages had happened. And so we went from our first was, we were a little nervous, but everybody was excited. And then we tried again. And this one was really hard because the mom didn't want to know anything. She said very clearly, I don't want to know of the positive pregnancy tests. I don't want to know about the ultrasounds. I don't want to know anything until after we get a heartbeat confirmation at 7 weeks. And so she didn't want to know anything. She made it very clear to me and my agency that just don't tell me, good or bad, if something happens before then. She didn't want to know. And I ended up getting an SCH, like a bleed, and ended up in the hospital where we found out that we were pregnant and that we had one healthy baby with a heartbeat. But she didn't want to know because it wasn't past that 8 weeks. And so I had like to hold all of that in because I was wanting to be respectful of her. But it was really hard to kind of navigate that and to know that, you know, I was holding that. And it's hard to describe as a surrogate who's never had any fertility complications or miscarriages, how you take on that stress of who you're carrying for, and you kind of take on their emotional baggage, for lack of a better word, from their losses. They kind of project onto you. You're just excited to go into this, nothing's up, and then they project these fears, and then you start to get nervous about things you never even thought about before because they are. And it makes it really hard to be excited because you want to be excited, but you also want to be mindful of what they've been through. It definitely can just make for kind of an awkward interaction for a while. So I'm so glad though that you were able to talk through that and reach out for help so that way you could remedy that. So after the intervention then with the case manager, were they starting to get excited? Are they telling people yet? Or are they still kind of very quiet about everything until baby comes?
Everything improved so significantly. Within the first week after that, I get a screenshot from the intended father of himself with his siblings and his parent with smiles on their face. And, you know, obviously it was a Zoom where he spread the news, like confessed the. So that was that, you know, that warmed my heart, not just because I'm happy for them, but because now I feel a little bit less of a something that needs to be hidden or shamed. And it just got realer and realer for them too. Like they suddenly asked me like, what, you know, if I need pregnancy clothes now, like according to the contract, they don't need to worry themselves. I can just buy it and put it into the, to the expense sheet. Mm-hmm. And I have their lawyer's contact information and she has, she's in charge of their trust fund. So they weren't asking from a place of like, we'll buy it for you. That wasn't, it was interest.
Yes. Suddenly, interest in the pregnancy. In me.
Yes. And I really appreciated it. I felt like seen.
Yep.
I'm having an impact. Like they started sharing with me, where will we put the baby when it's born? Which room? And these weren't conversations they were having with me up until that point.
Yeah. So a question for you, because I know as part of our like intake and screening, we start from the very beginning, at least with Surrogacy Mentor, really asking women to start considering what type of relationship they want with their intended parents and what type of relationship they would be okay with. Like, would you be okay with kind of no contact and you just deliver this baby and know that it's going to be loved? Do you want them at appointments, kind of what you're hoping for, so that we can try to match them with intended parents who want that similar level of contact? Is that something that you all discussed before your pregnancy?
Absolutely.
It is. And so they just didn't feel comfortable once it got to it.
No. So first of all, I think I surprised myself with how much I wanted them. At first, I had said, We live driving distance, like maybe an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours if there's traffic. And at first we said that they would come to my city for every scan, for every checkup, for everything, every opportunity to meet their baby, right? Maybe not like a blood test or I don't need them to come for that. There's nothing happening there. But every encounter, or maybe even just, you know, to socialize, to get to know my kids, you know, for us. But I had said originally that, you know, respect my space. I have four kids. I have a full-time job. My husband has a full-time job. Like, I have hobbies. Like, we're not very available. Weekends are dedicated to, the community that we're involved with. So we don't have that much free time anyway.
Yeah.
But once the pregnancy took, I realized that I craved their involvement even more than I had originally anticipated.
Yep.
And so the woman, you call her a case manager? Okay.
Yep.
I didn't phrase it that way. She suggested that we move from texting every day, which was the way we communicated up until that point, to phoning, or maybe even video chatting. Mm-hmm. If not every day, then every other day. And so that's what we've been doing since then. We video chat like for half an hour minimum every other day. So it's an intense relationship by virtual.
Yeah.
And they still continue to come for every scan, for every like encounter with the baby, mm-hmm. With fetus. So the relationship it's quite intense.
That's wonderful. Well, and I think then even better on you for recognizing like, oh, that changed. And actually, I really do want them, and that you still felt comfortable enough to be able to speak up. And I think that's so important when it comes to this, because in the end, yes, it is a baby for somebody else. And you go into this knowing it's not an attachment to the baby that you crave, but you want that, you realize how much you want to be a part of their excitement. And that's a lot of what it is. And I think it's amazing that you were able to recognize that need and speak up for yourself, and being okay with that. That like, hey, I know in the beginning, I didn't think I was going to have time for all of this, but actually guys, like I really want you around and I want you to be a part of this. And I just think it's so wonderful that you were able to speak that and they were able to hear you and really start getting a lot more involved, because those last 11 weeks, I know for you as the pregnant person, may seem like they're going to crawl by because this is where things start getting uncomfortable and whatnot, but it is going to go fast. And soon before they know it, baby's going to be here. And I'm just so glad that you were able to speak up and start to get that relationship that you were really hoping for out of everything.
I'm really starting to like obsess over the actual birth. Like, do I want them in the room? Do I want them in the room for the whole time or only for part of the time? Like, are we going to hold hands? Are we going to look at each other, like making deep eye contact I'm asking myself, I have a doula like planned, but
yeah.
She's not my friend. I don't know her. She's a stranger to me that I booked because I always give birth with doulas. I'm planning on giving birth without an epidural. I've never had an epidural before. Mm-hmm. So how will I feel with them in the room if I'm like moaning and groaning and in agony or vomiting I'm not thinking about the baby being born yet. I'm just the relationship with them, with the IPs. Like that's really more meaningful to me than... I mean, of course, I want to see their face when they get their daughter. Of course, yes. That's why I'm doing.
That's why you. Yep.
Of course, but like in the meantime, in throughout this journey, and look, we're not best friends. They're older than me by like 15 years, and we don't have the same like religious, not the precise same religious affiliation. So we're not going to become like best friends.
Yeah. But I think with that, my advice for that would be you say this is going to be a fluid thing, because I know in labor and delivery, sometimes you don't even want your husband looking at you or touching you. So that adding the extra layer of having them look at you and touch you, I think tell them, we'll just see how it goes. They may not feel, you may feel totally comfortable or oblivious to them being in the room while you're moaning and throwing up or whatever happens, but they may be like, oh no, we don't want to be here for the whole thing. So I think as long as both of you are open to things kind of changing and being fluid and just settling on the part, whatever part you really want to make sure they're there for, if it's important for you and them to see her come to the world and cut the cord, then that's the part we can focus on. And then if they kind of pop in and out as you feel comfortable for the rest, maybe just kind of figuring out ultimately what's the goal there. Because like I said, there were points where my husband, you know, was looking at me and trying to do something, and I was like, go, just, he was driving me nuts, you know, because they don't know what to do either. So it's just an interesting, I didn't have much of that for all of my surrogacies. I had to have C-sections. And so parents, the two sets that were able to be there just were very in the corner. And then my last set, they wanted nothing to do with the operating room and just said, you can just bring her to us when she's wrapped up and nice. I have some really funny pictures of my other dads, though, just standing there in the corner, like terrified. They didn't know what to do. So luckily I didn't have to deal much with labor and intended parents, because yeah, I could only imagine. What advice would you give women considering becoming a surrogate, just in general, and then as far as navigating a relationship with their intended parents?
Okay, so I have to answer this question with some context, because I'm in a support group of other surrogates, and what we all have in common is that our IPs live nearby. Like nearby meaning driving distance, not flight distance. And in that context, the relationship with the IPs becomes very face-to-face, very intimate. Like it's not a competition, but sometimes the surrogates that I converse with, they'll be like, oh, we invited the IPs for a meal in our home. And then someone else will say, oh, well, we were invited to the IPs home for a meal that they served us, or they, you know, I needed help with the childcare, so the intended father came to look after my kid. Like, there's a,
yeah, they like bragging rights, so to speak.
I don't know if bragging, but yeah, like it's kind of expected in the framework where I'm receiving a lot of support and a lot of shared information and knowledge and experience. And I value that a lot. But within that context, it's really important for me to share the following piece of advice, that it's an intense relationship. Mm-hmm. And it can become intrusive.
Yep.
For example, I was recently diagnosed with gestational diabetes, and they want to know what I'm eating. And they can arrange food deliveries for me because they know my home address, and they, you know, they know the supermarkets nearby. So, like, you know, do you like this kind of cottage cheese? Like, it's like they're really getting into your plate. So you got to put boundaries, but then also, like, if they don't offer, I might get offended. Like, don't you care?
Yeah.
So. So it's a really fine line to walk. And there's also two of them, right? There's the intended mom and there's the intended dad. And I have independent relationships with both of them. I mean, they both call me, not when they're together, to ask me how I'm doing and to, you know, to chit chat. So I'm maintaining two intense relationships. Clearly, between me and the mom, there's a stronger bond, like an emotional bond.
Yeah.
That wasn't fair. I shouldn't have said clearly. You know, there are women who are less emotional and men that are more. But in this case, it really did turn out to be quite of the classic.
And it's definitely complex, because you're right. There is that fine line between wanting their involvement and wanting them there and them wanting to be there, and then them being overbearing and way too up in all your business. And yeah, there's that fine line. So you're absolutely right that setting those boundaries is important, and establishing that trust, like with those boundaries, like, yes, I have gestational diabetes, but you are trusting me to carry this child for you. I need you to trust that I am doing the right things and following what the doctors are saying. And you need to just be okay with that and have faith in that trust that you have. And that is really hard for intended parents. In the end, everything about surrogacy, both on the GC's end and the intended parent end, comes down to trust. You are trusting that they are going to help take care of you through this process, and they are trusting you with this huge thing. It's a lot of trust and faith that you're putting into somebody carrying your child, and it is definitely a fine line. So I think having your voice and knowing that and setting those boundaries early on, or if you haven't, feeling okay to speak up for yourself and set those boundaries as they come.
And I'll give you another example. So this very week, we had an ultrasound to check how much amniotic fluid and the weight and size of the fetus. And so the case manager had asked them in my presence, would you like to put your hand on Raya's belly to feel the baby kicking? They had never asked or offered. And I have been thinking about it for a long time because I feel her kicking all the time. And like, she's not my baby. So I'm not going to come to my husband and say, oh, honey, do you want to feel the baby? Because like, it's not his baby.
Yep.
And even my kids, they're not excited anymore from this. Yep. Like, yep. The excitement phase already passed. Now nothing's happening anymore. So it's not new or special that there's a kick. So like, who's going to care about this kick? Who's going to be excited? So I want the intended parents to ask to touch me, but they didn't. And so when the case manager invited them to ask, they were so bashful and shy. And the intended father was like, no, I wouldn't feel comfortable. That would be too much of a boundary. Like, and the intended mom was like, oh, maybe I'll send a recording and she'll hear my voice. Like, you know, the sense of sound is more potent than the sense of touch because she can differentiate between different sounds, but she doesn't know who's touching the belly. Like, how would she know that it's me? I don't know.
And yeah, like, it's not for the baby at that point. It's for them and for you to have that moment.
Right. Yeah. So I found myself almost taking offense, like almost feeling disappointed that they weren't like, yes, we've been wanting to ask you for permission, but we didn't know how. At the end, the case manager was like kind of pushing them. So they decided that the intended mom would put her hand on me and the intended dad would put his hand on his partner's hand.
Yeah.
And guess what? She didn't kick.
Oh no. That's always how but yeah, it's such a complex relationship on all fronts. Even in the best of relationships, it is. You don't want to push too hard or not hard enough. And a lot of times, I can just speak from my situation, they don't want to push boundaries either. With my second set of intended dads, we were super close. They came to visit all the time, even from across the world. They stayed at my parents' house a few times. Like, we were super close. But then when the baby came, I didn't want to like push any boundaries, like, and ask to hold him because I'm like, I don't need to hold him, but like, if they want me to hold him, like, I can. And they didn't want to make me feel uncomfortable by asking me if I wanted to hold him, but of course I did. And so finally, my mom was like, can she hold the baby? And they're like, of course, we didn't want to make her feel upset. And it was just those things, like, we were both being too mindful of each other and each other's feelings that, like, even, you know, in the closest of relationships, it was weird. Like, I didn't want to ask and they didn't want to ask. And when nobody asks, then nobody gets what they want. And so finding that voice is hard, but it is so essential on everybody's front. And they can say no. And if you don't feel comfortable going to them directly, like you did, you know, you should have a case manager, an intermediary, whether it's official. If you do an independent journey, you should have somebody who can speak up for you in those moments. I just did an interview with a birth doula who specializes in surrogacy births. And I had never had a doula. And looking back, I really wish I did, even in those moments of surrogacy, because she could be that voice for you when you feel like it's awkward. And in your labor and delivery, you know, she can be that voice for you. Like, okay, guys, she's having a rough time. Maybe it's time to step out and we'll call you back when the baby comes. And, you know, being that voice and advocate for you. So it is hard to find that voice. But if you know you don't have it, I would suggest finding somebody that you trust that does. And be an advocate for yourself or find somebody else who can advocate for you is super important for sure. So any other advice or tips as you get closer to delivery and we start wrapping up our chat?
For me, I'm really enjoying therapy that I've never done before. I started the surrogacy and it was part of in the contract, it says that there's like a certain amount that's allocated just for the psychosocial. Mm-hmm. It's really great to be able to talk through with someone. This is the psychologist that I speak with is actually the same person that did the evaluation.
Oh, good. Yep.
so like she's an expert in being able to sift through women that are like in the right mindset to become surrogates in the first place. And
yep.
It's a very validating experience. I found that really powerful for me. But also I talk about it with a lot of people and it just helps me like formulate my own opinions when I'm feeling a little confused or emotional about issues to just talk about it with your mom, with your best friend, with your partner. And it helps you come to terms with, you know, what, you know, to name what you're feeling and then you can choose which action to take in order to continue the journey, you know, in the best possible way.
Exactly. Because, you know, being pregnant in general can be an emotional roller coaster. And then you throw in the added layer of a surrogacy pregnancy. And it's a whole lot to consider because you have to take into consideration how you're feeling and how they're feeling and how you want make them feel and how they make you feel. And do they mean it this way? Are they going to take this the way I mean it? I mean, it's a lot to process all at one time. And that is why screening and making sure you have those psychological evaluations even beforehand to just really make sure that you are ready for this process. And not just everybody thinks the hard part is giving the baby back and going home without a baby. And that's not the half of it. A lot of times it is just juggling all of these dynamics and every set of parents or parent is different. Everybody's circumstance and how they got to surrogacy is different. And so all of those relationships are going to be different. And so there's no way to really fully prepare yourself for what's to come. But just knowing that it is intense and that's okay. And there's nothing wrong with it feeling intense or having those types of questions and feelings. It's very normal to have that. And so anybody listening, just take comfort in knowing you are not alone there. If things feel weird or hard or awkward, it happens. It is a very complex thing that we're doing. And just know that that is okay and reach out for help if and when you need it. But it's part of it. It's part of it.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast by Surrogacy Mentor. I want to thank our very special guest, Raya, for joining us today. Be sure to check us out online at surrogacymentor.com and modernparentmentor.com if you are interested in knowing whether surrogacy is right for you, and take our 2-minute easy quiz on our website if you're interested in becoming a surrogate. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to learn more about gestational surrogacy and how to have a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey. Talk to you next time.